الله أكبر الله
The number of people looking to buy firearms is up nearly 50% compared to 2007, according to the FBI.
In the month of November, our gun sales were probably comfortably 250% of what an average month is.
All in favor of losing your rights? Please do nothing.
It's a fact, it's okay, I'll find a way. It ain't gonna take me down no way. Yeah.
This rally is not about guns. But what these guns that everybody's gonna wear represent is the true badge of the free man. That he can bear arms in defense of himself without permission from anyone. And that's what these arms represent.
Gun laws in the U.S. vary by state. And the amount of regulation is a hot-button political issue.
It can't take me, I'm free.
You have associated two U.S. senators and associated them or comparing them to terrorists. I said, well, they are.
It can't take me.
Fill your hand, you son of a bitch!
You can't take me.
Welcome to Doc's Freedom Files.
Freedom. Keep walking, keep on your toes, and don't stop talking about freedom.
In the aftermath of 1214, there is both genuinely anguished dialogue and much affected posturing in supposedly enlightened circles about America's gun culture. The effete pseudo-intellectuals have much to say about those who have been disparagingly described as the bitter clinger rubes. Interestingly, there is virtually no talk about America's much more dysfunctional disarmament culture. This is the culture which created the sanguinary killing grounds of gun-free schools, where society's jackals know they can maim and kill with impunity. It is the culture which reflexively demonizes firearms while calling for greater understanding of and programs for those who would misuse them. The disarmament culture is that which, in the face of common sense, psychology, and everything known of human history, demands that potential victims are disarmed in the vain hope that those who would harm them will be mollified by their helplessness. It is the culture of shrinking, frightened men and weak, faint-hearted women, which holds that removing a sword from the hands of the good will equally empty the hands of the evil. It is the culture which assigns collective blame for 1214 to millions of innocent gun owners, yet wholly absolves legislators and bureaucrats who made it impossible for teachers and other staff members to protect themselves or their students. The disarmament culture, which has spent decades demonizing firearms, helps ensure that firearms are unavailable when they are needed most. The tragic irony brings to mind Milton's, "They who have put out the people's eyes reproach them for their blindness." Strangely, on the day of our own tragedy, in the People's Republic of China, a madman went on a rampage in an elementary school and stabbed and sliced 23 victims. Oddly, we hear no gnashing of teeth over a supposed Chinese knife culture. Yet the following day, the Chinese government immediately demanded, quote, "no delay for U.S. gun control," end quote. That the American disarmament culture should find itself in agreement with the government of Communist China should come as no surprise. It was Chinese Communist leader Mao Zedong who famously stated, "Political power comes from the barrel of a gun." There are still shooting deaths in China, but they are at the hands of the government, not civilians. Why? Immediately upon seizing power, Mao confiscated all privately held firearms to ensure that political power was not shared. Mao's Cultural Revolution later murdered upwards of 50 million political enemies. If you wish to avoid a repetition of 1214 and answer to the souls of the innocent, do not remove the tools of protection, but ensure that they are always available to those who may need them. This is Doc Toops wishing you life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Hi, I'm Cope Reynolds, and welcome to The Shooting Bench, the most radical, right-wing, conservative, no-holds-barred, information-packed, freedom-loving firearms information program on talk radio, beginning right now.
Die, fight, and you may die. Run, and you'll live, at least a while. And dying in your beds, many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom!
Well, they may never take it, but they're dang sure trying. Welcome to the Shooting Bench, the 21st of October. Almost something I've been forgetting to do here. This is Amy's favorite month. She's a big Halloween fan, so we haven't been putting our Halloween music on here for the intros and stuff. We'll try to rectify that before the week's over. Anyway, I told you Friday we had a ton of stuff to cover today. And so we're gonna jump right in on not to spend too much time doing other things because we have a ton of stuff to cover today. So let me get into the chat room first here, make sure we got sound. I think our sound is okay today. We got Christian has joined us, and Nan has popped in there a few minutes ago. Bunkin' Cat, Yakima Glock, T-Bow, a few anonymous. All right, good deal. All right, let's move on in. I don't even know where to start for sure. I don't know if you watched some of the video from the tornado in Dallas, in the Dallas area. I don't know what the wind speed was. I just found out about that. I mean, I knew there was a tornado there. I knew it was bad, but I didn't know it was this bad. Yeah, I'm going to do a little research on it after the show and see. I don't know how high the wind speeds were or what was different about this particular tornado, but there are videos out there of tractor trailers. I've seen tractor trailers blow over. I've seen from straight wind and not a tornado, a train blew off the track over in New Mexico, and that's happened more than once. But this has taken box trailers, semi-trailers. Now, I'm not talking something that goes behind a little bobtail truck of some kind. These are full-size containers and semi-trailers. Took them up in the air several hundred feet, and it was not just blowing them over. I mean, they did pick them up and took them away. So I'm not sure just how much, what the wind speed was on that, but it must have been pretty spectacular. I'm going to check on that after the show and see what we were doing, what was going on there. I don't have any particular order to do this stuff. I'm going to have to kind of hurry because I've got a whole damn bunch of stuff to do it. Arizona Red said, well, I keep doing the show after I win the election. You know, it's going to be hard enough to do it It's going to be hard enough to do this even through the campaign. For those of you that are new or haven't been on for a while, I have thrown my hat in the ring for sheriff of Apache County, Arizona. And I'm realizing now, let me tell you what's going to take me so much time. And I guess this is important enough to cut into my time a little bit. If we win there, I say we because it may be my team and I, and I've also got a guy running for legislator, representative of LD7, which is it's the largest legislative district in the United States, land wise, area wise. And Apache County is the sixth largest county in the United States. And it has been predominantly Democrat forever. I don't know when the last Republican sheriff was. I've never seen one, you know, in the few years I've been here. If we win this, when we win this, I was just informed, it will be historic. It will make the history book. It'll make news all over the country. Once in a while you hear of a place where, a Republican senator or whatever has been popped in someplace that hasn't had Republican for 100 years or something. This is going to be much like that. The thing is, if I win every single vote in this half of the county, which I have no question in my mind that we'll win a significant part of it. If we win every single vote from I-40 south, every voting age person in this county, if we win every one of those votes, we still cannot win. It is not possible. It's not possible unless the Navajo Nation does not vote at all. We have to win a significant portion of the Navajo Nation vote. And we don't have to nearly get all of it. Probably don't even have to get half of it, but we've got to get a pretty good bit. And traditionally that has been, well, impossible. Now, here's what has changed.
The Tinker says a new Sheriff Joe. Yeah.
Here's what's changed a little bit. The Navajos became very disgruntled with the whole Democrat thing during Obama, because of the lies that were told, the promises that were made, and it didn't happen. And they were very disappointed in that. Now, were they disappointed enough that it's going to change everybody over to Republican? No, it's not. But it has changed some. And Tebow sent me a deal the other day about a woman in the Navajo Nation that is running for a House seat in New Mexico. The Navajo Nation covers a good bit of New Mexico also. But she's entering the race here for an open congressional seat. And she's taken Ben Ray Lujan's place, or she will be seeking that seat. Ben Ray Lujan is a rabid Democrat dog. He's just, we've had problems with him for years when I was living over there. But this Native American woman is the second Republican to announce that she's running, along with 10 Democrats. So, again, if she wins this, it will be historic, not only because she's a Republican, but because she's Native American and a woman. So if all this falls into place, there's going to be some gnashing of teeth going on here. So let me get back to how we're going to get the Native American vote. Numerous people have told me they're trying to help. I get that, and I'm grateful for it. Let me answer Granny's question right quick. Is their land sovereign? Yes and no. It's supposed to be to a certain degree, but they still have the ability, the privilege, the right, probably privilege in their case, to vote in our elections. However, we cannot vote in theirs. This is grossly unfair to us, and to them, if you ask me. And I don't know why this is or how this came about. I know that a whole lot of people are very unhappy with this. And because of this and several other things, mostly economic issues, Apache and Navajo County is in the process of being split. There's something called the Sitgreaves County Project, where the two counties will be split sideways, east and west. Right now, they are very, very, very long, narrow counties. So they're going to split that kind of in half, and that's going to take a lot of the Native American vote away from, you know, they pretty much vote party line. And whatever, whoever's on there. Now, we've had people, and I think I told you this the other day, we've had people that worked the polls out there, and they have watched the younger natives tell the older ones, I mean, literally take their hand and guide them and have them vote for, they don't have any idea what they're doing. They get them out there, they promise them a, you know, a $5 bill or a donut or a flashlight or, you know, a new dog or whatever. And they go out there and vote however they're told to vote. And this has been a terrible problem. It's a tremendous disservice to the Native American people, to the Navajo Nation. And Christian just said that he saw a lot of Trump 2020 signs on the Navajo Nation. Well, that's exactly my point right there. Now, as I said, was going to say a while ago, there's been several people, well-intentioned people, that said, you know, the only way you can win this is to change your party to Democrat. And I said, well, that ain't fixing to happen, period. But my long answer to that, and what I'm going to tell the Navajo people when I get out there, we're going to have to spend a hell of a lot of time out there on the Navajo Nation. And at every one of these little stops, I'm going to tell this story. I'm going to tell them that people have told me I have to change my party to Democrat in order to get your vote. I said, what kind of a person, or I'm going to say, what kind of a person does that make me? Right off the bat, I am deceiving you to get your vote. I said, what's on this card right here where it says Democrat is the only place that I'm Democrat. I'm not Democrat in my brain. I'm not Democrat in my heart. So how is it that everybody thinks that I can win your vote by deceiving you before we even get started? I'm lying to you before the polls even open. And another thing, the Navajo Nation, Navajo people, all of the Native American people across the nation, not just the Navajos, are incredibly patriotic. I don't know that it's so much for the flag and mom and apple pie and all that. I think it's because they have a spiritual bond with the earth, and they will protect their portion of it, their country, at all costs. There's been a lot of heroes and a lot of co-talkers, for one. Ira Hayes, you know, there's been a great number of Native American people involved in various wars all the way down through history. And they have been very unselfish in fighting for their country. So the fact that, well, for those several facts there, I'm hoping that I can appeal to their sense of their sense of honor, their sense of pride, and help them to understand that the Democrats have been no friend to them. Also, across the board, the Navajo people are extremely pro-life. So I'm going to point that out. How is it that you people continue to vote for Democrat when part of their platform is pro-choice and killing babies? And not that, and Dan says, yes, they're patriotic, many in the military. We knew that. Dan and I, when we were in Germany, knew two or three of them that were actually from this area. And were from, you know, southern Utah, northern Arizona, some Nevada, somewhere. And we actually contacted one of them here a few months ago. And I could tell you several stories about the ones that I knew when I was in Europe. But anyway, exactly, Doc, that's exactly what I'm going to do. What do you want in your next sheriff? Now, the sheriff doesn't have anything to do with pro-life issues, but I want them to know what my values are and what I stand for, even though I won't be able to do a whole lot as sheriff in that regard. But they need to know where I stand on it. So, plus the fact that I'm going to be adamant about helping them to fight the number of Native American women that have been kidnapped off the reservation and drugged, tortured, sold as sex slaves. This is a huge market on the reservation. Same with the children. So it's going to be quite a challenge. And the thing is, let me get back to what started this conversation. AZ Red asks if I'm going to be able to continue to do the show. Short answer, probably not. This is going to take a tremendous amount of time. I may be able to do some pre-records. I may be able to, you know, I may have to get down to one night a week. I don't know. But I do know, and I'm going to just tell you flat out right now, that I'm going to try, but I'm not going to jeopardize my run for this. We have been needing to get a conservative sheriff in here for years, for a long time. If I think that there's any possibility of making this happen, I don't mean this to sound rude, but I'm not going to let this radio show stand in my way. I've been doing it now for, 15 years? And it may have to take a back seat for some of this, at least for a while. So I'll keep you informed and let you know. What is it? How long have I been doing it anyway? 14 years, going on 15 years. I've been doing this show. And I've done hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of these shows. You know, for a while we were doing it 5 days a week and 3 days a week. And it started out 1 day a week when I was back on AM radio. But I have no idea how many there actually is now. You know, I have the one flash drive with over 800 shows, 830 or 840 shows on it, all from Just Measures radio network, you know, before I took over the network. So there's probably pretty easily 2,000 shows, probably more. No, it has to be more than that. But anyway. All right. Well, let's move on here. I'll keep you informed. I want to, you know, I think it's still kind of a good release for me to be able to sit down here and talk to you guys. You know, whether you give a damn about hearing it or not, I don't know, but I'm going to tell you anyway. It kind of helps me to think and get my thoughts together while I'm talking about this, just broadly like this. So we'll see how it works out. Thank you, Dan. I appreciate that very much. So let's move on. Like I said, no particular order here because I've got so many things that's been backing up. But in California, and this surprised me a lot, California has a new law here that was just published like 4 or 5 days ago, allowing drivers to eat roadkill. Now, that sounds kind of bad in the title. What it means is that if you hit a deer or something, you have the legal right to pick that deer up and take it home with you. I don't know exactly. I haven't read it's in Senate Bill 395. I haven't read the whole thing on it yet. But, you know, in Idaho, we used to get on a list up there, a roadkill list. And if someone hit a deer or an elk or something in your area, they would just start and go down the list and say there's a cow elk laying at mile marker whatever, you know, on the east side of the road. Do you have time to go get it? Do you want it?
You say no, they make the call the next one on the list. I never said no. In New Mexico, and like I said, I don't know how it is now, but I've had the opportunity to do this one time. It was Christmas Day, I think, or maybe the day after Christmas, of about 2005, probably, maybe four. And we come upon a young buck out there that was been hit by a car and broke down in the back end, and somebody just, you know, drove off and left it. So I got out and shot it with my 10 millimeter, and I called the game warden and told him what happened. And he said, okay, just if you would, hang tight there a minute. I'll be out there in a few minutes. He wasn't too far away. Of course, it was elk season at the time, not deer season. So. Anyway, he come out there and he said, okay, he checked it out and found the bones broken in the back legs and stuff, and decided that I hadn't broken any laws or anything. And he asked me if I wanted it. According to New Mexico law, you're able to buy that roadkill. You just make an offer on it. And I said, you know, I don't have time to do it, but whatever, I'll give you $20 for it. And he said, okay, wrote me a receipt out for it and drove off. And I said, okay, there's a nice young buck laying on the bar ditch there for $20. That worked well for me. I like that. That was one of my easiest hunting trips there. I just killed a cow elk the day before, so I had plenty of meat to take home. But this thing in California is, and Governor Newsom, as sorry as he is, signed this into law just, 2 weeks ago? Yeah, that would allow drivers in the state to eat what they unintentionally kill. And I think that's a great thing. They said each year, an estimated over 20,000 deer alone are hit by cars on the California highways. This translates into, you know, to figure it up. If you debone every deer, you're probably going to get, 60, 80 pounds of meat out of it. So 60 or 80 pounds times 20,000 equals a lot. That's a lot of meat wasted. So there'll be people that take advantage of it, I'm sure. There'll be people that ride down the road, pop one in the head with a 22 and try to get away with that. And I hope they catch them for it. But anyway, I think this is the only good thing that's happened, the only good news out of California for I don't know how long. And it's a hunting deal. All right, let's move along. We've got too much stuff to cover here. In Washington State, and Yakima Glock ought to be able to fill us in on this. There's conservative groups there, some 3%ers probably, that are very discontent over some of the gun laws in Washington. Washington is, I wouldn't say quite leading the country, but it's running at least a comfortable third place in draconian gun laws. And they're talking about doing a citizen arrest on some of the legislators there who have come up with some of these things. So I wish them all the luck in the world. I'm hit it hard. Go ahead and do it. Another story out of Oregon. Remember the guy that the Oregon legislator that, well, he wasn't a legislator. I'll say, what was he? He was a mayor. Oregon Labor Commissioner. Yeah, it would have managed to shut down this Christian bakery. Remember that? Who refused to bake a cake for a lesbian couple. This was a big deal in the news. We talked about it at great length many times while this was happening. Well, anyway, he come up for re-election, and it ain't happening. He loses the election and goes back to the civilian sector here, effective most Ricky Tick. So that works for me. I'm okay with that. My goodness. There's all these stupid things. Let me bring this up on my phone. This is an interesting deal. This is out in the part of the country where I used to work. It's out
near San Angelo, Texas. And I used to work for a ranch out there. It was the Jack V. Williams Ranch. And I think I told you once before, there was a big old Hereford bull out there named Sam Domino, who they took a lot of semen from and froze it for artificial insemination and whatnot. Huge, huge bull. Anyway, this is another one. This is a longhorn, not a Hereford. And he is, if I can bring this up here, there it is. Okay. I couldn't get it on the laptop because they're blocking ads and I have to go through a big rigmarole to get it to come up. But there is one that has just smashed the world record for the largest horn span of a longhorn steer or bull. 6-year-old longhorn from Rock Springs, Texas, not Wyoming. World record, I'm having a hard time talking. Largest horn span on a steer. This longhorn is named Bucklehead. 11 feet, 1.8 inches from tip to tip. The previous record was 10 feet, 7.4, set in May. And they say paperwork's being reviewed by Guinness right now. But it looks like he's going to be the new 2020 Guinness Book of World Record holder there. There's a video on it. It shows how they measure it at the showcase and all that. And this bull is remarkable. If you look at the picture of this, just look up Rock Springs Longhorn or Longhorn Bucklehead, you know, something like that, and you'll come up with it. It's remarkable steer. I don't know how he carries that around. Man. Jeez. All right, I'm not going to take a break because we have too much to talk about. Not yet, but I'm getting there. Hopefully I'll have time to get it done. I may not have time to finish that because I've got to talk about some of these. Here's a story. I'm not going to expound on this because I get pissed off too easy. But there's a possibility here that a Texas court may force a little boy to become a girl. This is all due to a custody battle, and 7-year-old James is caught in between his parents. His mother, the pediatrician named Ann, wants her son to be her daughter. She's gone so far as to enroll him in school as named Luna and only provides him with dresses and girls' clothing. Folks, I'm going to tell you right now, Amy said that's child abuse. If that was my son, I'll just leave that right there. You can use your imagination. You better have a good imagination too. School officials know that he's a biological boy, but his classmates don't. James has a twin brother that's not being forced to wear dresses or masquerade as a girl. James lives as a girl when he's with his mother, but with his father, and given the choice, the little boy lives as a boy. This is psychological child abuse at its finest. This kid's going to be confused. I can't even imagine. It would be best if I didn't say what I'm thinking right now. But, all right, well, let's just move on here. There's a story that's been on Facebook here quite a bit. And about the title is the ATF has been enforcing a rule that does not exist. And this has to do with the definition of lower receivers and all that. The reason for this is because the ATF is allowed to run roughshod over the citizens, making up rules as they go along, and then pretending like they have the authority to enforce it. And people just let them. The ATF is no different than the BLM. They have been, the overreach of these organizations, most of the federal organizations, but these two are the worst. So this goes hand in hand with what I was talking about several years ago. Probably 3 or 4 or 5 years ago. I talked about not understanding why, as we're doing so many custom jobs on Glocks, why is it that we have to register or do, you know, the background checks and the transfers on the frame only? The frame only, Glock or 1911 or anything else. Now, the 1911 and what I'm about to say is going to be a little bit different than the Glock, but the plastic frame couldn't be made to fire or resemble a gun in any way, shape, form, or fashion. It's a piece of plastic that is, even with all of its guts in it, is completely and totally harmless and useless. But if you take the upper receiver with all of its guts in it, the slide, it would be easy, even though that slide and barrel and springs and parts and everything in it, firing pin, the whole thing can be purchased over the counter like a screwdriver. A 14-year-old girl could order all of that and have it shipped to her house. There's nothing restricted on it all. Now, you know what that 14-year-old girl could do with this when she gets it? Because of the boot heel of the, what they call the boot heel of the striker on the Glock, sticks out below the bottom of the slide there, it would be simple and safe. Now, let's stop right there. Stop. Don't go out and try that because I said it's safe. Let me rephrase that and say it could be made to be safe. Okay? But don't go do it. You could take and chamber around in that and take a little piece of a 2x2 or a 2x4 or whatever and duct tape that slide down there with the back end sticking out just enough that you could get a fingernail under that boot heel, you know, or a screwdriver or a clothespin or whatever, and pull that boot heel back, you know, 3/8 of an inch or less, and release it, and that gun would fire. But it's the plastic receiver, the bottom part of it, that has to be, you know, has to be entered into the logbook at the gun store and all that. But you couldn't make that fire if your life depended on it, no matter what you do to it, except put the slide back on it. So there's, and there's one guy apparently has fought this and was successful in his fight against the ATF over this rule here, because the lower part of the lower receiver doesn't have all the parts in it that the definition by law requires that makes it a quote-unquote gun, firearm. So there may be some things changing here. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to keep an eye on this, see what happens. But this one's not related to anything that we've talked about so far, but I found it funny as hell. In Ireland, I can't play this on the air because this guy's, he's Irish, you know. So, he didn't want everybody to be unhappy when he died. So he made a recording, and there's only a couple of people that knew about it. And he put this recorder, this machine in the casket, and after it was lowered into the ground, the recording came on. A pretty good speaker. It's all very clear. Pretty good speaker come on there. He had a long illness. He knew he was going to die, and he prepared for this, you know, to begin with. And it started out with him with knocking on something, knocking. It sounded like he was knocking on the inside of that casket. And he said, "Hello? Hello? Let me out. Where the hell am I? Let me out. It's dark in here. Is that a priest I can hear? This is Shay. I'm in the box. No, I'm in front of you. I'm dead." And then he started singing, what's that song? "Hello Again. I just called to say I love you." Or no, "I just called to say goodbye." So there's a video of the whole thing online. It's funny as heck. And anyway, the whole crowd, you know, even the people that were grieving before, everybody cracks up laughing. So this turned into a typical Irish party after the recording played there. So that was pretty cool. He said he wanted to make sure his wife would be laughing and when she leave the cemetery and not crying. So they'd been married for 43 years. Pretty interesting deal there. That's kind of neat. All right, let me, I'm not going to go to a break, but I'm going to have to take a second because I had planned to go to a break, but now I don't. So let me pull up some more. I've still got several more things I need to do here. So we did that, and we did that. I'll do that next week or Wednesday. Stand by. Oh, there's a video here of, I watched the video, and there's an ex-cop, Baltimore, I believe it was Baltimore. Yeah, Baltimore police officer. I mentioned this, not this particular story, but I mentioned this trend that seems to be happening here in a few places. Because of this trend, we found out we had the federal whistleblower that changed the whole outcome of the trial in up in Oregon after LaVoy was killed. There's been a few, very few, but there's been a few cops that have gone against the grain, against the blue line, or whatever you call it there, and reported some corruptness and misdoings, misconduct of some of these officers. And this particular one happened in 2011, but the story came out a few years after that. It's not a very real recent, but he found a witness, two of his fellow cops beating a drug suspect after the suspect who was running from the officers kicked a door in of a home and that belonged to another officer's girlfriend, and then they beat him almost to death. And they spent so much time, harassing him and calling him a snitch and a rat cop. They even threw a dead rat on his car's windshield. And eventually, you know, here 3 or 4 years ago, he bowed to the pressure and resigned. And I can't blame him. But anyway, we're seeing more and more of that here over this last 2 or 3 years here. So, moving right along, we did that. Oh, this is a good one. You guys need to, I don't think I managed to pull that one up, but it has nothing to do with cops or guns or anything else. It has something to do with preparedness. And right now, you know, there's the tourniquet is one of the most important things that you can put in your, especially in your blowout kit. You know, you have an IFAC, you have an individual first aid kit in your 72-hour kit, and you've got
Band-Aids and Neosporin and a few things. Hopefully you've got a tourniquet in there and some compressed gauze and stuff like that. But in a blowout kit, the only thing you're interested in is getting the bleeding stopped and stabilizing, the ends of broken bones or something is the most severe wound, life-threatening wounds, so that you can either wait or move somebody if you must to help. And these tourniquets are pretty expensive. We talked about the cat tourniquet before, and I think we've talked about the rat. These are, I think the cat is, what is it, combat application tourniquet or something like that. And the rat is rapid application tourniquet or applied tourniquet. Anyway, there's another one here that doesn't have a clever little name to it, but it works just like them. And out of, there was like 286 reviews on this tourniquet. Overwhelmingly, they were extremely positive. They said that they, some of the people have actually used them, as medical professionals or in the military or as a law enforcement officer, and that they performed flawlessly. The purpose for me telling you this is because they're about a third the price of the other ones. The other ones are about $25, $27, $30 a piece. These are there's a package right now of three of them for $20, and this is a great deal for those that I talked to somebody today and said, "Well, I've got one." I said, "Well, you got one?" I said, "There's at least two in your family." And, you know, the old saying goes, two is one and one is none. So if you have one tourniquet, you know, it may or may not be enough. It may be there when you need it. But what happens in a poop hit the fan situation when resupply is not as simple as clicking on an item on Amazon. So at this price, folks, stock up on them. Have at least two or three spares, if not, you know, half a dozen or more. And one in every first aid kit, blowout kit that you have. At least one. This is, and I'll tell you, I don't know, there's not a fancy name for this. It has some initials. I'm just going to say it, what it is. I don't know if it spells a name or what the hell it is. But, wow, there's a big old spider there. Let me see if I can open this up and get a little more. It's available on Amazon. And stand by just one second while this opens up. Okay. It is called, I don't know what it's called. I'm just going to say this. S-Z-C-T Clink. Sierra Zulu Charlie Tango Kilo Link. L-I-N-K, Lima, India, November, Kilo. S-Z-C-T, Clink. The S-Z-C-T and the first K are all capital letters, and then Link is spelled in lowercase. I don't know if that makes a difference or not. But I strongly recommend that you try some of the reviews. Were very, very, very good for this item. So I say you ought to jump on it for your own sake, for your family's sake. All right, moving right along, there's an elk. There was an elk. We may have talked about this elk before a few years ago. I don't remember. It seems familiar. But up in the up in Wyoming, there's a what do they call it? The National Elk Refuge up there. It's just outside of Jackson Hole. On the, I believe it was on the, it's on the northeast side of Jackson Hole. I drove through there one time and it was almost daylight. I was going to a job. We was building a bridge over the Snake River right there in Afton. And I was looking out there and I saw these large dark masses, you know, kept driving, kept looking out there, and said, "That is elk out there." I could not believe the number of elk. It's a winter refuge. They come up out of Yellowstone Park and up from all around the area right there into this one area, into the National Elk Refuge. There's never any hunting allowed that I'm aware of on there. And when I was there, that's been quite a few years ago, every winter they had 14,000 head of elk come and stay on the National Elk Refuge. Well, there was one bull there named Brutus.
Brutus is a monster.
He's a brute by anybody's definition. Apparently he died a natural death, I guess. He's pretty old. And the rack on this thing is astounding. For those of you that are familiar with Boone and Crockett scoring and everything, he scores a 440. You know, anybody that gets a 350, 325, 340 bull has done a good job, and they're rightfully very proud of it. This guy, this big boy right here, scored a 440. He was 50 inches tip to tip. And let's see, he said he went down to a 410. Oh, he lost to a 410 class bull, losing nearly 30 inches of antler. But let's see, Brutus was not seen on the feeding grounds through the months of January or February in 2018. However, he was eventually found dead in March of this year, I think, no, last year, towards the back of the refuge. They guessed him to be somewhere between 14 and 16 years old. They said a 400 class bull is one in every 10,000 head of bulls. So definitely a once in a lifetime. So he peaked out at 440 before he died. He was a 405 after he died. So even after death, he was, you know, when they die, they get older, they, you know, the horn and everything start to, the antlers start to shrink and stuff. So, but that is a remarkable animal, and you should go and see the,
I wonder if I can paste this in the chat room for you. You'd go check out the pictures of this thing. It is one hell of an animal. Let's see. I don't know. That doesn't look like the right one. Maybe I'll try to get in after the show or something. But anyway. Or you can look it up. Just look up Wyoming bull, Brutus, whatever.
Shouldn't be too hard to find. All right, let me get back here. We're getting close to running out of time here. This is requires a salute. This was this happened a few months ago, but it was this year. I wasn't aware of this. I don't think we talked about this when it happened. This was the last remaining member of the first ever SEAL, Navy SEAL team. Celebrated his 94th birthday in April of this year. The last living member of the first ever U.S. Navy SEAL team. So he's 17 years old when he enlisted in the Navy. And he and his teammates were employed in some, you know, top secret stuff. Pretty interesting story to read. It's a few months old, but I've just stumbled across there and thought I'd share it with you right quick. All right, moving right along. Let's see here. I'm going to try to get this done here on time. And we're going to skip that one. That's going to require a little talk, and we'll save that. Here's one that for you, and this is there. Thank you, Kojo, for putting it on there. That's the exact link to those tourniquets right there. Kojo went and looked it up for me and stuck it in there. So, yeah, Yakima Glock's got one in his EDC sling bag and one tourniquet in every rig. Yeah, absolutely. It's I think people don't, you know, they feel like they have a first aid kit. They don't even know what IFAC stands for most of them. And they've got a little first aid kit they bought at Walmart, and they think that they're good. They're squared away. That's all they need. And it's just, if a life-threatening injury occurs, then you're just toast.
And the other thing is it doesn't do you a whole lot of good to have a lot of these items if you don't know how to use them. So get at least some very basic first aid training. We've talked about that many times. Nothing has changed. I still want you to do it. I'll save that for Wednesday. I told you about that already, the trucks being thrown up in the air and everything. Yeah, I think the rest of these I'll save until Wednesday. No use running overtime. This is not time-sensitive stuff here. Interesting stories still. I might give a couple of them to Amy, actually. All right. Well, there you have it. We've got, I know that most of you are not in Arizona, much less northern Arizona. Some of you are. AZ Red's as far north Arizona as you can possibly get, but she's not in my, matter of fact, AZ Red, there's a guy that I was talking about earlier, is going to, he's shooting for your representative. His name is David Peelman. I don't know if he's going to make it up there to do any campaigning in your area. I'd like for him to, but because of the population and the long drive, I'm not sure if he'll make it up there or not. But he is the real. If you see his name on the ballot, understand that he is the real deal. He is constitutional. He is exceedingly pro-life. He's everything that you want him to be. So he's the guy, when come election time, he'll be running in your district up there in the largest legislative district in the United States. So, and those of you that may be in this part of Arizona, as I said earlier, I have thrown my hat in the ring for Sheriff of Apache County, and if you happen to see fit after listening to me for a while, I'd appreciate you support me and give me your vote when the time comes. It's going to be a while. We've got a year yet to worry about, a hair over a year. So we've got a lot of work to do, a lot of trips to make, and got to try to encourage those people up north of I-40 to give us their support also. All right, well, I need to get on out of here, so we will see you guys Wednesday, and I do very much appreciate you joining me tonight. Good night.
Well, that wraps up another edition of the Shooting Bench. Join me Monday and Wednesday from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, and again on Fridays from 7 to 10 for the Shooting Bench. Good night, and thanks for joining me. No explanation, no reconciliation.